WDB's Rod Hill, FM News, 1 hour.
Quiet, please.
Ladies and gentlemen.
You ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Live. This is the Lars Larson Show.
President Trump is one badass president. He secured the border at a level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
He is an existential threat to democracy.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
Announcing we're not counting game by
Oh my God. Did you hear that gunshot? That shot rang out less than an hour ago in Orem, Utah, at Utah Valley University. And the news we have at this point is that Charlie Kirk, founder of Turning Point USA and one of America's prominent young conservatives, has been shot. We will bring you details on his condition. Nobody has a firm grasp of what his condition is at this point, but this is a horrific event to see this kind of thing happen. But it's one of those things that a lot of us have been predicting for a while, that conservatives would come under attack. We've got a president on which there were at least two different assassination attempts. We have liberals throughout America who are calling for violence against conservatives. And now we have the apparent shooting of Charlie Kirk. And I want to make it clear, we do not know his condition at this point, so we will bring you that update as we get it. But this has literally happened in about the last 30 minutes or so. Welcome to the Lars Larson Show. And before I go anywhere else, you've got to say a prayer for Charlie Kirk. No matter what you think of his politics, I don't care if your politics are liberal or conservative, this should not be happening in America, where we see people coming under physical attack simply because of their politics. And what has amped it up tremendously are liberal politicians, some of them with prominent names, who go on social media. They sit in front of TV cameras on Sunday mornings on network TV, and they talk about violence to conservatives. And I'm not talking about small names either. I mean, this is the same crowd of people who routinely stand up and defend criminals. They defend illegal aliens. They defend child pedophiles. They defend the illegal aliens who are committing horrendous crimes against American citizens. And now the news that in the last hour or so, we'll pin that down closer for you later, Charlie Kirk, the founder, co-founder of Turning Point USA, has been shot. I've had the occasion, I've run into Charlie Kirk at talk events. I've met him, but I don't know him any more than that. But the fact is, nobody in America should be shot because of their politics. The man was right in the middle of answering a question. I'm going to let you hear the moment again, so if it bothers you, be aware of that. He was being asked about events of mass shootings in America. And would I agree there are too many mass shootings? Absolutely. Do I think those mass shootings will be addressed by simply having more laws on law-abiding Americans? No. It makes absolutely no sense. And he was in the middle of answering that question, and he said it really comes down to how you define these mass shootings, whether or not you include events or incidents involving gang violence. Take a listen to that moment less than an hour ago in Orem, Utah, at Utah Valley University, as Charlie Kirk was apparently shot.
Announcing we're not counting gang violence.
Now, what we know at this point is that police say they have a suspect in custody. If the man that they had in custody at the event is the one pictured in news reports from Orem, Utah, where this shooting happened at Utah Valley University, he is an older white man, balding, wearing a pair of glasses. Police had him down on his knees with his hands behind his back, standard procedure with a suspect, and he was saying the words, "I have the right to remain silent." So we know nothing more than that about the suspect, but we will get you those details as they become available. An evacuation of the Utah Valley University campus started immediately after the university went into lockdown. Eyewitnesses said that Charlie Kirk fell from his chair. And in fact, in some of the video that's already come out, he reaches for his neck with his right hand, and he reaches toward the right side of his neck, and then falls over, and at that point, pandemonium reigned. He was simply doing a live Q&A session. And any of you who've watched Charlie Kirk on social media, and I've certainly watched lots of his interactions, he's a very, very smart young man. He interacts with people regularly. He takes questions from critics and who try to, you know, try to somehow go after him and say, oh, we're going to prove that you're wrong. No, he just takes the questions and he answers the questions very calmly and very soberly. I'd ask you to say a prayer for Charlie Kirk, for his family, for his friends, for the other people at Turning Point USA. But multiple sources have confirmed the shooting. We've seen the video that was taken, and I imagine there will be more video that will come out. The suspect, a single suspect, and as you heard on that tape, a single shot fired that apparently hit Charlie Kirk in the neck, and we will bring you an update on his condition when that becomes available. But at this point, there is no word of what his condition is. They said that the shot was fired near the top of what is called the Low C Center, and that is at Utah Valley University in Orem, Utah. Charlie Kirk does these events all the time. He shows up, he talks to people, he answers questions logically, calmly, and gives people more information about the Constitution, about the law. He is a staunch conservative, and the fact is that this is not what should be happening. And what I want to hear at this point, I want to hear those people who've been calling for going out and challenging conservatives. I don't mind being challenged on the facts, on logic, on the law. But when you have people on the political left who are calling for violence against conservatives, that has to stop. It absolutely has to stop. And we know that in the last 4 years, we saw the forces of the Department of Justice deployed by a president of the United States who apparently was not even competent mentally, but telling the Department of Justice to go after conservative parents who show up at school board meetings and talk about their concerns about the way their children are being treated. And they were labeled as domestic terrorists by none other than Joe Biden and other members of the Biden administration, including Kamala Harris. So when you have that kind of language going on, and you have major members of the United States Congress, prominent people in liberal circles around this country who are calling for a war on conservatives, who are calling for attacks on conservatives, these people have lost their minds apparently because of Trump derangement syndrome. And I don't think this is anything more or less than an extension of Trump derangement syndrome. We're getting no new word at this point, but as we get Charlie Kirk's condition, we will let you know. What we do know at this point is that less than 1 hour ago, Charlie Kirk, founder, I should say co-founder of Turning Point USA, who regularly and routinely goes to American college campuses, and there are oftentimes protests against him, as though the left can't stand to have the man come and give a speech somewhere. And I think all of us who are conservative have faced that kind of opposition, where people say, we don't want you to talk, so we're going to silence you. I think this may have been behind the motivation behind what happened to Charlie Kirk less than an hour ago, as a single gunshot rang out in Orem, Utah, at Utah Valley University, and Charlie Kirk, in the video, reaching for the right side of his neck with his right hand, and then fell out of the chair that he was sitting on, or the top of the table he was sitting on, as he simply calmly and cogently answered questions from students. Details as they become available. Glad to have you with me. Say a prayer for Charlie Kirk and his family. You're listening, and for America. You're listening to the Lawrence Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
He may talk about serious issues, but even Lars has a sense of humor.
I have a joke for you. The government in this town is excellent and uses your tax dollars efficiently.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
That makes a lot of sense, a lot of nonsense.
Right, you're bloody well right. You know you got a right to say.
This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
That great moment every day where Lars brings you the cold, hard facts without any liberal wokeness from the Daily Dead fish wrapper or mainstream media bias.
You always hear my commentary about now, but I want to start by first saying, number one, Charlie Kirk, co-founder of Turning Point USA, one of the prominent young conservatives in America, very well known and very well received by conservatives throughout this country, but apparently hated by liberals. He was shot less than an hour ago. We do not have a report on his condition. When we do, we will bring it to you promptly. But say a prayer and spare a thought for Charlie Kirk and everyone around him. He was shot in Orem, Utah, at the Utah Valley University. And he was shot apparently in the neck. There was video of the shooting that happened, and we will bring you his condition report the minute we get a solid report. In the meantime, consider the facts of life for transit systems in Portland and Seattle. Number one, transit is hazardous to your health. From the drug-contaminated air to the assaults on passengers, you're putting yourself in a dangerous place. Number two, transit systems absolutely depend on billions of dollars in cash from Washington, D.C. for their very existence. So, when you hear about the random and horrific stabbing murder of Irina Zarutska almost 3,000 miles away, don't imagine it won't change things here. American Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy sent that warning this week. The failure of Charlotte, North Carolina to protect its passengers on public transit means he plans to cut off their federal funding. Here's the quote. I guarantee that if I find out what I think I'm going to find out, they are not going to have your federal tax dollars going to their public transit. Zero, none, nada. Secretary Duffy calls violence on public transit an epidemic. Portland and Seattle want billions of dollars from the federal government to pay for ridiculous choo-choos like Max in Portland and Link Light Rail in Seattle that never, never live up to passenger traffic promises. That includes the almost unbelievable $1 billion a mile for Interstate Bridge Light Rail, a project that I hope dies a horrible death. Now we have a president who's sick and tired of liberal tolerance for the criminal class, and that federal money spigot just got turned off tight because of the feckless city management of transit. Not just in Charlotte, North Carolina, but in Portland and in Seattle. Expect the money to stop there as well. Glad to get your calls today. It is a horrible day to hear about this kind of act of violence aimed at a young American conservative, 31 years of age, Charlie Kirk, shot in Orem, Utah, while he was giving a presentation to literally thousands of students who'd gathered to hear what he had to say. As he was talking about mass shootings in America, a shot rang out, a single shot. It apparently hit him in the neck. We do not have word, a solid word, of his condition right now. And the police have a suspect in custody. As we get details, I will happily and quickly share them with you. Our question of the day brought to you by Multnomah Medical Clinic. No pills, no shots, no surgery. Get better fast at Multnomah Medical Clinic. Francis Davis writes, Lars, this Evergreen School District strike has gone on long enough, and I didn't sleep last night solving all the world's problems. Why can't citizens sue the union? What grounds other than negligence? I don't know. I figure you might or know of an attorney who would try. Have a great day. Signed, Francis, parent of an ESD Cascadia Tech student. Well, I don't think you're going to get anywhere suing, but what you can do is elect sensible school boards. And in this case, at least Evergreen Schools says they are going to go to court, because strikes like the one that has been, you know, that has struck Evergreen School District, those strikes are illegal and they should not be happening. And now today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Presented by Oregon City Garage Door.
Well, I'm going to give today's Daily Grill. John Lee is a state representative and a man who follows transit issues closely. And he went to last night's meeting of the C-Tran board. That is the one that is supposed to provide mass transit in Clark County. Well, they took a final vote on the Michelle Bellcott motion from back in January to return to the previous language saying C-TRAN will not pay for any costs associated with light rail. Tim Hine led that effort. Sadly, it failed. Three voted in favor, five voted against, one abstained. The three Vancouver reps all voted against it, as did the two county reps. So in other words, they want all the small towns in Clark County who don't get anything out of light rail to pay for something that Vancouver's mayor wants. Also in the audience were half a dozen or more Democrats pushing back against the small city's representation on the C-TRAN board, also in favor of light rail. Of note, Mayor Ann McInerney Ogle from Vancouver was on Zoom participating from Washington, D.C. She was back there trying to sell various federal agencies on this $10 billion boondoggle. Bellcott has paid a huge price for trying to do the right thing. Her lawsuit got reinstated on the C-TRAN, or to get reinstated on the C-TRAN board continues, but the financial cost of bearing the burden of that is weighing heavily on her husband and on her. Democrats spend taxpayers' money defending their power grab. Michelle spends her own money defending her doing the right thing. I'm glad to get your calls today, no matter what they might be about. The fact is, we've got too many people in this country, most of them on the political left. There may be a few on the right, but I'll tell you something. I can find dozens of names of prominent liberals and Democrats who've advocated for violence because they don't like Donald Trump, and they don't like anybody who voted for Donald Trump. But if you want to join the conversation, it's always welcome right here on the Radio Northwest Network at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Our best email of the day brought to you by Cap Concrete Coatings. Turn your garage, patio, or driveway from ugly and rough to beautiful and tough. They've done it for me. I hired them to do it, and it's absolutely beautiful. Check out CapConcreteCoatings.com or call 855-CAP-THAT. Janet writes, and Lars, for the last several years, I've noticed more and more vehicles with expired tags. I'm not talking months. I'm talking years. My own neighbors have a faded temporary in their back window for the last 3 years, and their second car's tag is from 2023. I'm guessing they have no insurance. It just doesn't seem to be on law enforcement's radar. Now, I'm a resident of Washington, but I work in Portland. I see another mismanagement tsunami headed our way. Remember when Washington voters voted to have our tags cut back to the original price of $38 and our own state sued to block the people's vote? Yes, I do remember that. So now we see so many people driving around without valid tags. This past week, the Oregon legislature once again placing a huge burden on the citizens and people who work in the state of Oregon. I personally will be hit with a double increase in my payroll tax. Residents will be hit with that increase in their car titles and registrations. Mark my words, not only is Portland a city of lawlessness, but now they drive in unregistered cars. Next time you're on the road, count how many unregistered vehicles you see just on a daily basis. Signed, Janet. Janet, thanks for the email. Send those emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. One little update. If you didn't hear the news at the top of the hour, Charlie Kirk, co-founder of Turning Point USA, has been shot in Orem, Utah. He was giving a presentation at a Utah university. Thousands of students had gathered to see what he had to say. A single shot rang out. Police have a suspect in custody. More details will be forthcoming, and we'll get them to you as fast as we possibly can.
The Lars Larson Show. What a vegan actually is?
They say cows are bad for the environment because all they do is eat plants and fart, just like vegans.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. The horrible news that we brought you at the top of the hour, and that was that Charlie Kirk, co-founder of Turning Point USA, has been shot at a university event in Orem, Utah, at the Utah Valley University. We'll bring you updates on his condition as they are available. A suspect is in custody. A single shot was fired, and Charlie Kirk was hit. You can see it on the video. He was hit in the neck. We will, again, get you updates on his condition immediately after they are available. I wanted to turn to my friend Aaron Mesh, who is the managing editor at Willamette Week, and they've been banging out some great stories lately. Aaron, welcome back.
Good to be here, Lars.
And by the way, President Trump has also sent out a Truth Social note asking for a prayer for Charlie Kirk for his safe recovery from what has happened, and this is a horrible incident of violence. I want to talk to you about this story that you've done, and this was in cooperation with the Oregon Journalism Project, taking a look at the little town of John Day.
That's right.
Aaron, I'm having a tough time hearing you. I don't know if you're on a speakerphone or if on a headset, but I want my audience to hear what you've got to say. So,
can you hear me a little better now?
No, not much. But let's bear with it. I've been to the town of John Day. I'm sure you probably have as well. It's a very small town in eastern Oregon. And there's a controversy over the guy who was hired as the city manager almost a decade ago, because some people see him as the guy who's going to save the town, and some people see him as the guy who's going to destroy the town.
That's right. How it's coming through? Can you hear me at all?
No, it's very muddy, very garbled. I don't know what's up with your phone, but it's not doing very well.
I'm sorry to hear it. Maybe the problem is that I go out of town and my phone decides to stay out of town.
That's a little bit better. That's a little bit better. So what is this Nick Green doing to the town of John Day that's got him basically dividing the town?
So a lot of some classic economic development type work that the people of John Day feel is ultimately benefiting Nick Green more than it's benefiting them. You know, the context here is that John Day is a town that saw its mill shut down, which cost them 76 family wage jobs. It's a county that has the state's highest unemployment rate. That's Grant County, and the unemployment rate is 7.1%. And a lot of people both see him as someone who can use the tools of economic development, essentially many of the same tools that the PDC used in Portland to bring some revival to John Day, and then others see him as essentially a music man coming to town and promising that he can save River City with a marching band.
And yet, what has he actually done, that's bad for John Day at this point?
Well, what's good for John Day is new walking trails, new access to the river, two new subdivisions that he helped secure the housing money for. But he also managed to knock down or demolish the only swimming pool in Grant County, and build three industrial scale greenhouses that were supposed to help with food supply, but instead just sit empty. And a lot of this just boils down to that he made big promises, and then townspeople discovered those big promises didn't work out nearly as well as he pitched them.
I mean, did they really think that they built three big greenhouses, the town would suddenly start growing its own food, and that somehow tomatoes or asparagus would be cheaper at the local supermarket? Or I mean, that doesn't really make sense, does it?
No, it doesn't. And in fact, the produce that the greenhouses yielded proved to be much more expensive than expected, and the effort to get a private operator on the project fell through. In some ways, this is the echo of a lot of what's happened in East Portland with the redevelopment of the Gateway neighborhood. Economic development is a tricky business, and a lot of times when people try to lift the fortunes of a place that doesn't have a lot of private investment, they discover that they put in a lot of public dollars and the private investment never shows up. And that does seem to have happened quite a bit in John Day. With Nick Green.
I guess what I wonder about is, why do we trust people in government who, many of whom, have absolutely no background in this at all? I mean, they don't have any background in economic development. I think that describes most of the politicians who run for public office. And then they say, but we know what it's going to take to bring it in. Why don't they let the private companies that specialize in development of one kind or another, whether it's retail, whether it's commercial, whether it's bringing businesses to town, let them do it, and then if they show up and say, hey, by the way, the permit fees are a little high, or it's getting, you know, we're having a tough time getting permission to do these things, help them out in that way. Instead, and it's the way you described it, the government comes in and says, we're going to pour a pile of money into this, and when we do, if we build it, everybody else will show up. And as you said, oftentimes it doesn't. I remember when the Gateway District in Portland, they promised, well, we put light rail in here, it's going to be a job magnet. it turned out to be a job repellent, at least the way I viewed it.
Well, I mean, the question for John Day, this town that is absolutely beautiful, one of the prettiest parts of the state, is if you don't attempt something like an economic revival, what happens? Because nothing is happening there. It's on the rapid road to being a ghost town. Despite its absolute beauty, it does have a lot of prospect for it. And so the question would be, like, if you leave it to the private sector, what's the private sector going to do there? The private sector is skipping town. They're closing the mill. They're pulling up stakes.
By the way, I think I get to address that last. The mill is a sawmill that produces lumber, right?
Oh, yeah.
So okay. And Oregon and the federal government have choked off the supply of trees with which you make lumber. So I would suggest that maybe you need to open up more of the federal forests and the state forests and say, the trees are there. Keep your mill here and, in fact, expand it and improve it.
It is one option on the table, certainly.
And yet it's really not on the table, is it? Is Oregon going to do anything to try to say, let's open up the forest? The latest headlines I see from the cartel media, at least in Portland and Seattle, is Trump threatens to take protections off public lands. You can translate it. That is, Trump is saying maybe we ought to open up the BLM and the Forest Service lands and let us log some trees so they don't burn down 5 years from now. And then we'll plant some more trees, but we'll log the ones that we have in the meantime, and we'll produce some jobs and that sort of thing. I think the reason those mills are dying is that the lumber is still in demand. It's just that you can't get the trees to make the lumber, and that's mostly in the hands of the government.
Sure, but what you're criticizing there is that the headlines aren't favorable toward the policies. What I would respond with is that the policies would in fact suggest that mill might be open again pretty soon.
Oh, well, good. Are they going to keep the mill open? Do you know?
Oh, I don't think so. But, like, let's see the president deliver on something for a change.
Well, and the only thing that you know is going to happen, and you know it as well as I do, is that Trump, the minute he said, let's open up some of these lands and let's log these trees and then plant more, and we'll never run out of trees, literally, the minute he does that, there are forces within the Northwest who I think are still in the majority right now who say, we're going to take you to court and we're going to drag this thing out and we are not going to let that happen. So it's not as though he can just flip a switch and say, go ahead, log some trees, because he's got the federal courts and the state courts and politicians out here. I don't hear Tina Kotek saying, yeah, I love that idea of opening up the forest.
No, I don't think you do. That would strike me as extremely unlikely. I think we have well established where the political boundaries are reviving the economy that for so long carried on.
Absolutely right. That's Aaron Mesh, the managing editor. Well, I'm weak. Sorry about that phone line. The update from Orem, Utah, only that Charlie Kirk, co-founder of Turning Point USA, was shot at a Utah Valley University. We'll get you condition updates and word on the suspect that police have taken into custody. Hey there.
At least someone has a plan for illegal aliens.
Back in the White House, I will terminate every open borders policy of the Biden administration and begin the largest deportation operation in American history.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. A sad day because Charlie Kirk has been shot. We do not have an update on his condition. When we get it, we will get it to you promptly. But I wanted to tell you what's going on today. About an hour ago, Charlie Kirk, the co-founder of Turning Point USA, which, by the way, for people who say this is an outgrowth of Trump, no, Turning Point USA was co-founded by Charlie Kirk and another gentleman in 2012, 3 years before Donald Trump announced that he would run for president. He has headed up that group. He has been his chief executive. He was giving a presentation outdoors on an outdoor lawn at a university, a Utah university in Orem, Utah, when a single shot rang out. It apparently hit him in the neck, and we are waiting to hear Charlie Kirk's condition at this point. Police have that suspect or the suspect they believe did the shooting in custody. And as I've told you, as we get information about the suspect, I'll be glad to share it with you promptly. In any case, glad to have you with me on a Wednesday, even under these circumstances. If you want to join the conversation, it's 866-HEY-LARS. Let me start with Stephen. Hey, Stephen, welcome to the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Hello, Mr. Larson. I think President Trump should come in with a National Guard and start cleaning up this weird city. You know,
which weird city?
Always had problems with Antifa.
Which weird city are we talking about? Portland?
Portland.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, they're so weird that they destroyed the Elk Fountain during the George Floyd protest. What did an elk ever do to George Floyd?
That's a good point. Stephen, thanks for the call. Let's go to Annalee. Annalee, you heard us talking about the town of John Day. It sounds like you're in the town of John Day. What do you have to say?
I sure am. It's a beautiful place. First of all, I'd like to give my condolences to Charlie Kirk's friends and family. Terrible. The pool that they tore down was an uncovered pool. And then they wanted to raise $10 million to build a new pool for us.
$10 million?
Right. $10 million. Wow. And I suppose that right before we were able to vote on it, they changed the deal to where the pool would be uncovered and only open for 3 months a year.
Yeah, because John Day gets darn cold in the wintertime. I've been there. I know that.
Yeah, so we have a lot of old people that need to do stuff, and a pool would be perfect for them year-round, but I don't know why they would only make it during the summer when we can just go outside and swim.
And
where did
know.
That money go?
That's a good question. I don't know. I'd have to do some research on this. What do you think of this guy, this Nick Green, that has come into the town, hired as the city manager, and he's got all these projects going on, but it sounds like some people love him and some people don't?
Well, I'm going to say that I like the running trail. That's pretty cool. I can roller skate on it because it's brand new. But you know, I didn't vote for him. I'll just leave it at that.
Okay. Well, and I guess I just, every time I hear them talk about having the government lead the way on projects, if there's a project out there and it's an attractive project that makes financial sense, usually the government doesn't need to be involved at all. They just need to say yes, and the private companies will do it. If you say, but this is one of those ideas that nobody in the private sector wants to touch, well, usually that's because it's a loser idea. It costs more money than it's worth. It's not as popular as you think it is. And then the government says, well, let's take the taxpayers' money and invest it in something that's not very popular and not very doable.
That's exactly the same thing that they did with the poor greenhouse. It's beautiful, and it's just rotting. There was good lettuce and tomatoes out of it for a couple months, but that's all. And it would be kind of cool to have it be a community garden or something.
Yeah, but the problem is it sounds like it's a very expensive community garden. Annalee, thank you very much for the call from John Day. Let's go to Tim. Hey, Tim, welcome to the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind? Hey, Tim.
Hello?
Yes, sir. What's on your mind?
I'm waiting on Lars.
No, Tim, you're on the air right now. Turn your radio off. I'm talking to you right now. What's up?
Oh, okay. Yeah, this is Tim. I'm sorry, Lars. I did shut the radio off. I'm just curious on this gas prices. I know that 6% hasn't went into effect yet, but down here in Salem, since last Saturday till yesterday, the cut-rate gas stations here in Salem have raised their gas price 40 cents a gallon in a week. Any light on that?
No, I can give you a number of factors that are going to play into it, Tim. You've got two major refineries in California that are going to shut down, one this fall and one next year. Do you know where they're going to get where their alternate supplies are for getting gasoline? That's going to be Oregon and Washington. Oregon, of course, has no refineries at all. Washington State has a few. But it's a very small number of refineries. They also get some of their gasoline out of Reno, Nevada. But the minute you shortchange California, because the governor of California decided he wanted to get the refineries to a new standard, and some of them have said, well, then it doesn't make any sense. We're going to shut down. And when they shut down, they're going to have to grab onto that supply somewhere else, which means you're going to be in a bidding war with California. So I don't know if it's anticipating that or what.
thing too. They try to tell us, oh, we're on the winter or the summer blend, the winter blend. I think that's a bunch of malarkey myself.
Well, it is, but Tim, you've got to tell the government to stop insisting. We have about 100 different formulations of gasoline in America. We ought to have maybe 2 or 3 for winter, for summer, for high altitude, for low altitude. Tim, I appreciate the call. You got the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson.
So,
in exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Is the Lars Larson Show.
President Trump is one badass president. He secured the border at a level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
He is an existential threat to democracy.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. An update on what's going on with Charlie Kirk. He is said to be in critical condition at a hospital in Utah. He was shot today in Orem, Utah, at a university, a state university. A single shot rang out. He was shot in the neck, and he was standing in front of, or sitting in front of, thousands of people who'd gathered to hear what he had to say, to ask him questions, something that he has been doing as the co-founder of Turning Point USA since the group was founded about 13 years ago. We know the police have a suspect in custody. We do not yet know his name, but we will bring you those details as they become available. And fortuitously, I'd planned to talk to my friend Josh Markey, my friend of more than 40 years, former vice president of the National DA's Association. Josh, welcome back to the program. And I do want to start with what happened today in Orem, Utah.
And by the way, according to the New York Times, which to his credit is leading with the story on the front page, the person that they took into custody originally, they determined was not the shooter.
Good.
So I don't think they have the shooter in custody.
Okay. And that's not good. We'd like to see the shooter taken. But I want to ask you about something, because almost on a weekly basis, I can run sound bites of liberal politicians, and you were once a liberal politician, although DAs are not as political as, say, governors and mayors and members of Congress. But I can find sound bites almost every week. It's to the point where we only run them when they seem to be especially out of bounds. But they're routinely calling on liberal progressives to go out and confront and do physical battle with conservatives because they don't like the decisions that voters made in the elections. And I want to know whether or not you think that kind of talk is inspiring some of these events, like two assassination attempts on Donald Trump, at least. And there were others that were apparently planned. And then this today, I would call it an attempted assassination of Charlie Kirk.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any question about it. I do not think the left has a walk on doing that. There have certainly been times in recent history when, you know, also outrageous comments have been made about holding some figures on the left accountable. But particularly since Trump's was elected president second time, many sort of kind of mainstream liberals have adopted a sort of guerrilla language that calls for, you know, that would clearly be absolutely unacceptable to them if it was talking about one of their favorite candidates. I mean, we are a First Amendment nation, and I think and we need to be reminded that, you know, there's literally no other country in the world that protects free speech the way the United States does. And that means, you know, you have everything, the right to do everything, but as a Supreme Court justice famously said, cry fire in a crowded theater, or to actually make a credible threat against somebody. For example, in Oregon, you could say, well, I want to kill Josh Markey one of these days. That wouldn't be prosecutable. But if somebody was in my face shaking their fist at me,
saying you're not going to walk out of this room alive, then that would be an imminent threat. And if it were a credible imminent threat, that could rise to the level of breaking the law, right?
Right. It's in Oregon, going to be a crime called menacing. It's only a misdemeanor, but at least police could intercede. Yeah, I mean, you know, the American politics have become so toxic. I think you and I will disagree on this.
Conservatives calling for actual violence against our opponents. I consider myself a conservative.
I don't say go out and beat
these people up. I say go out and beat them on the issues.
Absolutely, Lars. You've never said anything like that. Donald Trump, particularly when he ran for office the first time, would, when there were counter demonstrators, tell, I remember watching the video, and Trump would say, you know, take them out and beat them up. And you know, in the context of, you know, a large group of people who are fired up, that's incredibly dangerous.
I do remember when he said that, and I think it was once, it might have been in Cleveland when that happened, but I hear people like Maxine Waters. I hear
it's unforgivable for them. I quite agree.
And yet it's forgivable by the media. The media seems to overlook it and say that's no big deal. That's just the way.
Well, they do. And obviously, the latest example of this, I'm sure you've talked about it on your show, is the murder of this Ukrainian young woman. I mean, that did not even register on the national mainstream media. And
for about
let's 10 be
days.
Honest. Because she was a attractive white woman, even though she's an immigrant.
And she was apparently assaulted by a black man who had a long history of interactions with the cops. Let's put it that way.
Well, and let's be real clear. He actually had served years in prison for armed robbery. It wasn't just some mental health issues like the mayor of Charlotte is trying to pitch it, which is incredibly irresponsible.
Well, in fact, the mayor of Charlotte comes out, and she's a political liberal, and she says, well, this just shows how much we have to help these people with mental. She's not worried about helping the girl with holes in her neck, you know, like Charlie Kirk has a hole in his neck now. She's worried about whether or not we're taking proper care of the mental health concerns of the suspect suspected of killing her for apparently reason whatsoever.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and I hope North Carolina has a death penalty. I can't remember.
Oh, no. You missed this. They took this case federal.
Oh, well, good.
Okay. Yeah, and Trump is saying if they can do it because it was a murder on mass transit. And I think that's what happened.
Right. Well, there are ways to make, you can reference it. And that's a good idea. I mean, again, that's in the tradition, frankly, of the civil rights movement of the 50s and 60s, when the Bobby Kennedy Justice Department would come in when southern states refused to take seriously the murder of civil rights workers, the federal prosecutors would file charges. Now, sometimes it was hard getting convictions back then, but, you know.
And who were those racist southerners? Which party were they a member of?
The which?
Yeah, which party were most of those southern officials a member of?
Oh, they were all Democrats.
Yeah. Yeah. kind of a pattern. Have you noticed a pattern, John?
Well, of course. I'm a Democrat. I still am. I, you know, have relatively little to do with the party anymore, but, they're the ones who've become kooky, not me. One thing I thought was interesting and disturbing about the New York Times piece, which I just read about Charlie Kirk, was they report this horrific injury, but they don't. Now, maybe there's an excuse.
You know what?
They don't say anywhere what his condition is.
Well, it is said to be critical. He was hit in the neck. He was hit in the neck, and Josh, those two big vessels that go up your neck are like a garden hose. And I've seen some of the videos that are very disturbing. And the moment he was hit, he was gushing blood in just a horrific way, based on those videos. And if those videos are accurate, you can't lose much more than about a liter of blood. But at this point,
right,
they say he is still alive. He is in critical condition. And I hope that everybody, left or right, will say a prayer for Charlie Kirk, the co-founder of Turning Point USA. Attempted assassination on Charlie Kirk today. Back in a moment. We'll get to your phone calls and emails. We're listening to the Lars Larson Show.
A
message from Lars.
I'd like to apologize to anyone I've not offended yet. Please be patient. I'll get to you shortly.
Who's next? This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. On this terrible day, Charlie Kirk, the co-founder of Turning Point USA, was the subject of an attempted assassin today, just hours ago. A single shot rang out. He was in Orem, Utah, at a university. He was speaking to a crowd of thousands, as he does on a regular basis, to crowds of thousands of students, and a single shot rang out. He was shot in the neck. He is said to be in critical condition. We're told now that the suspect police initially took into custody may or may not be the man who was involved in firing that shot. We'll bring you updates as they're available. I'm glad to have you back on the Lars Larson Show. If you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com, and you can vote in our X poll. You'll find the question every day at Lars Larson Show on X. You'll also find it on our website at LarsLarson.com. I want you to think back to the Biden administration. I know it's painful, but those four long years when Joe Biden, with his diminished mental capacity, was sitting in the Oval Office eating ice cream while somebody else used the auto pen to sign lots and lots of government documents on behalf of Joe Biden. And now, as it turns out, without his knowledge, it appears, including pardons and a lot of other things. But during that time, Joe Biden's Department of Justice was doing some crazy stuff. There were parents who were absolutely fit to be tied about the way that their kids were being treated in public schools. And many of them would, I think, sensibly, it's the thing that I advise parents to do. When you're unhappy with how the schools are treating your kids, then you show up at the school board meeting and you let the school board know that they are dead wrong in allowing the things they're allowing. Whether it's transgender boys who commit rape and molestation of other children in the bathrooms inside of a school. I'm talking about real instances, whether it's teachers who are indoctrinating your kids about transgender, about homosexuality, about any of those other things. You should show up at the school board and let them know you're unhappy. Well, guess what? The Joe Biden DOJ went after those parents. It actually told the FBI and other elements of the DOJ, we are going to go after those parents because they are domestic terrorists. That was the label that was applied, domestic terrorists. And they wanted the FBI to investigate these domestic terrorist parents whose only crime was to show up at their school board meeting and say, we don't like what you're doing to our kids. We don't like the way that you're spending our taxpayer money. We don't like the indoctrination. Well, guess what? The Democrats don't like parents. The Democrats don't think parents have any rights. And in fact, some of them even say so. I'd remind you that Terry McAuliffe, one of the Democrats who ran for governor of the state of Virginia, as it turns out, stood up and said, parents don't have any right to tell us what to do with their kids in public school. He actually said that. Now, he lost the election, and I think that was the right decision by voters. Well, guess what? Today, the U.S. Attorney General, Pam Bondi, sent a memo to the FBI and to all 93 U.S. attorneys around America. It is called Upholding Constitutional Rights and Parental Authority in America's Education Systems. Now, this, I'm sure, will send the heads of liberals spinning. She wrote in the memo, in recent years, we've seen a disturbing trend in which government officials and public education authorities have ignored, have dismissed, have even retaliated against concerned parents for daring to voice opposition to their children's curriculum. Notably, the prior administration, there she's talking about dimwit Joe Biden, engaged in such weaponization by targeting concerned parents at school board meetings with a threat tag reserved for potential terrorists. Under the leadership of President Trump and Attorney General Bondi, parents' First Amendment rights and their fundamental right to direct the moral and religious education of their children will be protected from unlawful attacks. Now, think about the 180 turn that represents. You had Joe Biden and his DOJ and the FBI saying the parents are the problem. Parents who stand up and object to what government schools have been doing to their kids. And I'd point out to you, if you say, well, Lars, that's just your opinion. Well, tell me why it is that especially in the last few years, just in the last 5 years, we've seen a gigantic drop in public school enrollment in America. That doesn't mean that those parents are not trying to get their kids to have a K-12 education. It means they have decided that the public schools are either so failed or so toxic that they have decided, I will take my child elsewhere. I'm going to get homeschooling. I'm going to get private schooling. I'll get parochial schooling. I'll use charter schools. I'll use online schooling. But I am getting my kids out of those public schools. What do you suppose it was that inspired parents all at once to say, we don't want our kids in public schools? And by the way, all of the projections I've seen for America's K-12 government-operated and, by the way, failing public schools, all of them have said we're going to see a decline for at least the next decade. They anticipate that parents are going to be pulling their kids out of public schools. And why? I think it's a sensible thing for them to do. So the Attorney General has now told U.S. attorneys to, quote, work with federal, state, and local partners to identify and respond to credible threats against parents or violation of their lawful rights. In other words, they're going to look at the school boards and say, if you're going to tell parents they have nothing to say and that they can't come to a school board meeting and object to the way that their children are being indoctrinated or treated, they're not the problem. You are the problem. And the DOJ will come after those school boards. And I think, well, they should. If school boards are so arrogant to turn to the taxpayers, and some of those taxpayers are parents, and say, you give us your money, we are now funding public education in America better than every other country on planet Earth. Literally. Every other country on planet Earth spends less money, and the teachers' unions make bank, and the teachers' unions fund the Democrat Party. There is no clearer connection than that. That's where the money is coming from that's funding the Democrats. They are looking at their meal ticket simply going away. And now the Attorney General is saying, we're going to go after the school boards, not the parents. Let me go to Tim in Seattle. Hey, Tim, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars, longtime listener, big supporter. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, except that I really hope people do say a prayer and spare a thought for Charlie Kirk and his family.
You know, I'm right there with you. The moment that I saw that happen, my heart sunk. I am kind of absolutely distraught about this. I am at the point where I'm feeling like I want to leave the country.
Well, I don't want to leave my country. I want the people who are threatening political assassination against people they disagree with, I want them to leave. I want them to leave because this has always been a country where we can disagree about things. And you don't say, if you disagree with me, you might get a bullet in your head. If the Democrats are going to do that, and I want Republicans to mind their P's and Q's as well. If there's ever a time where Republicans are inclined to threaten violence against somebody because of a political disagreement, I'll call them out for wrong. And my producers said, I said, if I had a soundbite of a prominent Republican calling for political violence, I'd run that thing back, you know, over and over and over again.
Yeah, I agree with you wholeheartedly. Some of our issues are that our media, like MSNBC, comes out almost first thing and says, oh, this is a Charlie Kirk supporter shooting his gun off in celebration.
They literally said that. Tim is absolute. Tim, I'm up against the break. But MSNBC had a reporter saying, we don't know where this shot came from. It could have come from a Charlie Kirk supporter firing his gun in celebration like he thinks we live in the Middle East.
The Lars Larson Show. And now, this musical message to anyone who wants to indoctrinate our school children.
Hey, teacher, leave them kids alone.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you. Although on this day, I've got to give you a quick update. Charlie Kirk is said to be in critical condition in Utah. He was shot at an event in Orem, Utah, at Utah Valley University. A single shot rang out. He was talking to a group of a couple of thousand college students, and his condition is said to be critical. Original report said that there was a suspect in custody. The university now says there is no suspect in custody. We'll update you as we get the information available. It's good to welcome back to the program Leland Vittard, who's host of On Balance with Leland Vittard and chief Washington anchor for News Nation. Leland, welcome back to the program.
Good to be here with you. As you noted,
sad day in really so many ways.
It is, because when did we get to the point as a country where political assassination, I mean, look, we've had assassination before, and I consider an assassination when somebody is shot for their, you know, a political stance or beliefs, you know, whether it's MLK, whether it's a presidential candidate, whether it's a president, as in JFK, that when you shoot somebody or try to hurt somebody because of their political beliefs, I consider that an assassination or an assassination attempt. John Solomon is now reporting, and he's a good journalist in my book, he's now reporting that Charlie Kirk has died, but we don't have official confirmation of that. But how did we get to here, and how do we get away from this, Leland? Is there a way?
Well, I think the only way to get away from it is by being honest about what it is. And I hate to immediately go to politics or blame or anything else. But I don't kind of know what else to say right now, because at times like this, we need moral clarity. Just yesterday, Chris Murphy, senator from Connecticut, a U.S. senator, we're in a war right now to save this country. And so you have to be willing to do whatever is necessary in order to save the country. That kind of language is what leads to violence. And, you know, you think about the political violence that we've seen on display in America over the past 18 months. I mean, it has almost exclusively come from the left. And I think in order to stop this and deal with this, you're going to have leaders on the left get up and not say political violence is wrong on all sides. They're going to have to say, stop calling ICE Gestapo, stop calling Trump Hitler. That's the only, if we want to come back from it, if we want to be honest about how to come back from it, that's what we have to do. In the same way, if we want to stop crime on the streets of Charlotte, we can't say we need more mental health care. We have to say we're going to lock up criminals.
I think you're right. And stop having members of Congress who'll stand up and say, when you see somebody who's conservative, go up and get in their face. And Leland, my producers would tell you, if I found a soundbite of a conservative, especially a prominent conservative, you know, calling for the kind of political violence I hear from the left, I'd be running that thing on a loop because I think that's wrong. It's wrong to do that. And we caution callers to the show. They can say whatever they want, you know, when they call into a talk show, other than the seven dirty words the FCC doesn't like. But if anybody says, and we should go kill so-and-so, you know, we certainly have heard for the death penalty for the man who stabbed the young lady on the train in Charlotte, North Carolina. But that's saying through the legal process, give him the death penalty, which is different than let's go out and kill people because of their politics. I mean, a whole different thing.
Right. Unquestionably. I guess what I come back to is I think it's really sad that we have to say this stuff. And I think, by the way, one of the reasons that people, responsible people like you, when people start calling for violence or start using warlike rhetoric or whatever it is, say to their own side, stop. It's because you realize how dangerous it is, right? And you realize that it gives your own movement a bad name. Whichever side it is on is irrelevant. And somehow on the left right now, that's just not happening.
But Leland, am I right to draw the conclusion based on what you said that on the left, they don't think it gives you a bad name to call for violence against people you disagree with?
Well, I guess that, and I hate getting into media commentary, but I don't know what else to say right now. I think they view it as the rules are different for them. And I have gotten a lot of criticism for my stance about Israel, for example, talking about the need for moral clarity, that there is right and there is wrong in the world, there is good and there is evil. I'm not a left versus right guy, I'm a right versus wrong guy. And when I see situations like this, we have to have moral clarity, which was demanded of everybody. The Sibboleth was demanded of everybody in 2020. You had to say Black Lives Matter. You couldn't say All Lives Matter because you had to call out the specific problem. Well, those on the left are not in jeopardy right now. You can have as many, you know, marches on the left as you want. There is not organized violence against those on the left. There is against those on the right. And that's just the way we are right now.
And not just on the right, but Leland, 130 churches burned in Canada, hundreds of attacks on Christian organizations, including both churches and compassionate care, the kinds of centers that are there for young ladies who are pregnant, who want some help, but they don't want to kill their baby. Those places get bombed and burned down and damaged. And there doesn't seem to be the kind of outrage that you would expect from people saying, you can't do that kind of thing. And they say, oh, you attacked somebody who's offering up help to young ladies who are pregnant who don't want to kill their babies. Well, how dare you? And they seem glad that those places get burned or bombed.
Yeah, I just want to interrupt you real quickly, Lars.
Yeah,
now from President Trump, the great and even legendary Charlie Kirk is dead.
Oh, my goodness.
So no one understood or had the heart of the youth in the United States of America better than Charlie. He was loved and admired by all, especially me, and now he is no longer with us. Melania and my sympathies go out to this beautiful wife, Erica, and family. Charlie, we love you.
And all he did, Leland, look, you know that I love to engage in debates with my callers, with you, with anybody. And I would watch him debate college kids. And he was so facile at it. You know, I'd watch him on social media, and he was very smart and very well informed. And very infrequently did I think he was wrong. You know, I can't remember the last time I thought, oh, I don't think he got that one right. And he would do this and go to these college campuses and frequently face all kinds of protests and attempts to silence him. And I guess that's what I find, you know, beyond this event today and the assassination, apparently, of Charlie Kirk and his death, is the idea that there's one side of America who loves to debate. And we love having those ideas out there. And there's another side that says, we will not let you speak if you don't agree with us. And well, that seems,
I think you're laying out right now the political argument in America. I have to say, Lars, I said this at the beginning of the week when you watched the video of what happened to Irina Zaruska in Charlotte, that we are at a turning point in America. And I think we are, that is continuing today with the assassination of Charlie Kirk. Unquestionably, that America in some way is changing. I'm not quite sure yet how, but I think there is a change in the culture. Because if we don't talk about this honestly, then there is no way to fix it. And I think also the first people on the left who really decide to address it honestly, it is going to be so refreshing that they're going to have a real voice and an important one.
Well, I told people I was thrilled that Muriel Bowser had said, hey, this is working. I'm going to work with President Trump. Good for her. And I congratulate her. I would love to see people do the same thing in this case. Call for a halt to the calls for political violence. The latest update that Charlie Kirk has died after being shot today in Orem, Utah, at Utah Valley University. We'll wait to hear about the possible suspect in that case.
People always ask Lars if he wants to run for public office, like president.
Do you know how much power I'd have to give up to be president?
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. The sad news, and you'll hear more about it at the top of the hour on the Radio Northwest Network. Charlie Kirk, the co-founder of Turning Point USA, has been assassinated in Orem, Utah. He was speaking to a group of several thousand college students at the Valley University in Orem, and he was shot. There was one shot fired. He was hit in the neck. He was hit very critically. For a time, he was listed as critical condition to the hospital. We have now learned that he has died. The word came from none other than President Donald Trump, who urged that Americans say a prayer for Charlie Kirk's family, and I would say a prayer for the country as well, because I think the country is in trouble if there is this kind of political violence going on, that when you simply disagree with somebody who was very popular with college-age students. Charlie was only 31 years of age. He and another man founded Turning Point USA about 3 years before Donald Trump decided to run for president of the United States. and he was shot. He was simply shot. And we don't know who shot him. Initial reports had it that he was listed, that they had taken a suspect into custody. There was, in fact, a man that they appeared to be taking into custody. The university now says that is not the suspect in this shooting, but we will see what we can find out about when they take a suspect into custody, and will they find the person who is responsible? So you have two assassination attempts aimed at President Donald Trump. You've got the assassination of Charlie Kirk. You have regular calls for political violence by America's political left. And I just finished a conversation with Leland Vittard. And the fact is, I think he's right. When the Democrats and the liberals and the progressives, however they want to describe themselves, when one of them finally says this stuff has to stop and they start to call people out, you know what would happen if a conservative, whether running for office, already in office, or in doing my kind of work, were to come out and call for political violence, you know what would happen. We would be shouted down, and rightly so. It does not make sense for America to settle its differences this way. But Charlie Kirk was shot to death today at Orem, Utah, during his American comeback tour, and he passed away. He leaves behind a family. He leaves behind an awful lot of fans and people who care deeply about him. And I think you're going to see on the left, I mean, you've already seen some of the crazy stuff, you know, because MSNBC literally had somebody on the ground who was saying, well, this may have been one of his supporters firing off a gun in celebration. Do these people think we live in the Middle East? I understand that when you look at other parts of the world, you'll see lunatics in places like Afghanistan who take guns out, automatic weapons often, and fire them into the air in celebration at various kinds of events. That's not America. And if somebody was there because they were a fan of Charlie Kirk, and they were a conservative, and they were a gun owner, I know what I would say to my friends if they said, hey, I went out and fired off my gun in celebration. You don't do that. And by the way, J.B. Pritzker, governor of Illinois, this is a knucklehead. He's out now blaming Donald Trump for Charlie Kirk getting shot. Is there going to come a time when liberals in this country are going to realize our leadership has been inspiring this kind of thing? When they compare Donald Trump to Hitler, when they suggest that anybody who voted for him is a fascist, they are effectively calling for political violence against anybody who supports President Trump. That's dead wrong. You can't do that kind of thing. And if you don't get shouted down by your own party, then your own party is complicit. I swear that there are people on the left who won't say this stuff themselves, but they also won't call out the people who do. So in other words, there are people within the progressive left who act like that guy on the hockey team that you send out and you say, go out and stick check that guy into the wall and injure the other player. And they know he's going to sit in the penalty box for a few minutes, but they don't care because he's going to go out and take one of the other guys out. This is what's happening in America. And what we need is not just conservatives. We're going to call them out for this kind of thing, and we should call out our own. And in fact, if one of you can think of an example where people on my side of the aisle, conservatives, have gone out and called for political violence, I'd be happy to hear the objection. You know that we take naysayer calls on this show all the time at 866-439-5277. But if you can catch one of those instances, I'd be glad to hear about it. By the way, this segment of the show brought to you by NickShivers.com for an instant offer to sell your home immediately. No showings, no hassles. You pick the closing date. NickShivers.com for details. And our X poll today: should the Northwest welcome water and power-hungry data centers while both those resources run short for regular citizens? The story out of Hermiston, where they have two major data centers under construction, and the City Council of Hermiston, this tiny little town on the eastern side of Oregon, is now saying, we want to attract more data centers. Well, number one, they don't bring a lot of jobs with them. But number two, even if they did, they chew up gargantuan amounts of electric power, and they chew up an awful lot of water for purposes of cooling. And if you say, well, what's the problem with that? We've already got a region where the power utilities are forecasting that this region is on its way to blackouts and brownouts in about the next 5 years. that they're going to tell us we don't have enough power to get it through a cold winter. We don't have enough power to get us through a hot summer. And at the same time, politicians are saying, electrify your car, electrify your house, get rid of that gasoline, get rid of that natural gas, run on electricity, while they proceed to sell those resources to people like data centers. Does that make any sense? You can find the X-Poll at Lars Larson Show, and brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. Find them at ultimatetruckservices.com.
The Lars Larson.
Gentlemen, you ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars. This is the Lars Larson Show.
President Trump is one badass president. He secured the border at a level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
He is an existential threat to democracy.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, although a terrible day, because if you haven't heard the news already, Charlie Kirk, the co-founder of Turning Point USA, has been assassinated while he sat in front of a crowd of several thousand college students in Orem, Utah, at the university there. A single shot rang out. He was shot in the neck, and doctors had at first listed him in critical condition. We are now told that he has died, and President Trump has confirmed that news as well. Now, I thought we'd talk about it with David Bozell, who is president of the Media Research Center. David, welcome to the program. I'm sorry about the circumstances, but this is a terrible day when people are assassinated in America simply because they're noted conservatives like Charlie Kirk.
Yeah, my thoughts and prayers, obviously, to his family and his two children. I think, Lars, I can confidently say that those of us that are in the conservative ecosystem, at one point or another, all of us thought, I know I'm guilty of it, all of us thought and wished we could do it as well as Charlie did it. He just had a skill set that was second to none, sharp as a tack, a sponge for information, was becoming quite the broadcaster in his own right, you know, going from activist to broadcaster, hosting his own show. He tackled all sorts of different mediums. He was a vanguard in the social media space for conservatism, and a lot of people have played catch up in that medium for quite some time, and Charlie was the first to do it. We're devastated at the Media Research Center. He was a friend of ours. So we're just shocked. And I got to tell you, some of the media coverage that's come out of CNN and MSNBC in particular in the immediate aftermath while Charlie is fighting it for his life was despicable.
It was. I mean, to have one of their people on air say, maybe it was one of his supporters firing a gun in celebration, which
disgusting.
Is ridiculous. I mean, yeah. David, you know what my Second Amendment friends would say to me if I said, oh, I went out and shot my gun even into the air in celebration? They said, what are you doing? Are you crazy? You don't do that. And yet this is apparently what the people, the lefty reporters at MSNBC thinks is a regular thing. Yeah, bring a gun to an event and shoot at the speaker to tell him how enthused you are about it. The idea that they could even think that's a possibility is crazy.
Yeah, the idea, I understand that the shooter may still be at large. There's some conflicting reports.
The university says the suspect is not in custody. We had some reports that he was in custody. We'll see what happens. But at this point, we don't know
but
definitively.
I bet our mortgages that it was not a supporter of Charlie Kirk's who shot him. I mean, the fact that that's where your instincts are, and that was Matthew Dowd over at MSNBC, the fact that that's his just instinctive response, this goes to show you that even if you, a conservative, were to go on MSNBC to be interviewed by Matthew Dowd And that would never happen because they don't allow conservatives. Well, I shouldn't say they don't allow. They rarely invite anyone from a right of center perspective to go on those airwaves. But even if you could bet your money that he would fumigate the room as soon as you left.
Of course.
And so it's just a despicable comment. Kathy Turr wasn't much better. Matthew Dowd went on to say, when you're constantly pushing this sort of hate speech, well, where was the hate speech? Charlie Kirk was inviting college kids to come to a grassy knoll to debate him on the issues of our times.
Yep.
Where's the hate speech there?
Well, right? You know, but David, you know what they're doing. If I say I don't like abortion, I oppose it, and I want it to end, they'll say that's hate speech. If I say I don't want people to come into my country illegally and I want that to end and I want the ones who are here illegally to leave, and if they won't leave, I want them deported, they call that hate speech. If I say I want all people to be admitted to universities based on their skills and abilities and ignoring their skin color, gender, or perceived gender or anything else, they'll say that's hate speech. In other words, as long as they define it as hate speech, then you can be defined as hateful.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right, Lars. And I hope the South Park guys are happy. They spent an hour a month and a half ago berating Charlie Kirk. Now, Charlie kind of took it in jest and took it in stride and laughed along with it. But what else are you going to do?
Didn't he say, I've arrived now, or, these guys are making fun of me. I must be getting something done.
Yeah. And so there is that sentiment, right? If the New York Times is writing a hate piece about you with someone within the conservative ecosystem, that means that you've arrived. Okay, fine. But here are the facts that we just can't ignore anymore. Donald Trump, Steve Scalise, Rand Paul, Charlie Kirk, Brett Kavanaugh. There was a man arrested with a loaded gun outside his house.
Yep.
Tucker Carlson. Good thing he wasn't home in Washington, D.C. when Antifa was destroying his front door, trying to break into his house. So on the left, there's Gabby Giffords, and the media immediately rushed out to blame, if you remember this. So I think you and I are old enough to remember this.
I
hate to admit that. But they immediately rushed to blame Sarah Palin. Immediately.
Yep. And because what? There was a campaign map saying these are the key congressional districts that we want to target. And they said, you see, she used the word target. Well, that means she must have been responsible, right?
That's right. That's right. I think there was a graphic with the rudimentary target symbol on a congressional district. Okay, big deal. This is night after night after night. The liberal media on multiple airwaves and multiple publications are demonizing and citing against the conservative way of life. They've been demonizing Donald Trump ever since he came down the escalator in Trump Tower. And anyone who ever dared to vote for him, all 76 million of us in the 2024 election who dared to vote for him, they've been demonizing us from the jump.
Okay, so Dave, I'm talking to Dave Bozell from the Media Research Center. Last quick question, 30 seconds.
Yeah.
Will the media be honest and say, this assassination of Charlie Kirk comes after multiple calls from those on the left for political violence?
No. No. Are they going to run Maxine Waters standing up on a picnic table demanding violence against Ted Cruz? I don't think
nope.
so. Are they going to say, oops, we shouldn't have aired that? We should have condemned that when that happened? Nancy Pelosi is guilty of the same similar rhetoric.
Yes, she is.
Of various parts over her career. So, and look, Joe Biden too. I mean, even though he does it in his Uncle Joe way, where I'll take you out in the back, back of the shed, and I'll sock him.
That's exactly it. That's David Bozell, president of the Media Research Center. We got the word today that Charlie Kirk was assassinated in Orem, Utah today. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show. What?
Donald Trump with a warning to Hamas at the Republican Jewish Coalition Conference.
If you spill a drop of American blood, we will spill a gallon of yours.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
I have a right to violence. All oppressed people have a right to violence. And I'm going to tell you something. It's like the right to pee. You got to have the right place. You got to have the right time. You got to have the appropriate situation. And I'm absolutely convinced that this is it.
Now, that is a soundbite from a movie called Born in Flames, but it's been getting posted lately a lot. And it was posted most recently by Black Lives Matter. We have a right to violence, and there is the right time, and this is it. Well, we've seen some political violence today. Charlie Kirk, co-founder of Turning Point USA, about a dozen years ago, he was shot to death, assassinated, probably for his political point of view. We can't look into the head of the killer. And in fact, it's unclear today whether or not the police have a suspect in custody or not. There were initial reports that they did, and then there were reports they did not. We'll bring you updates as they're available. But Charlie Kirk, co-founder of Turning Point USA, was assassinated today at Orem, Utah. He was there to speak to a crowd, and there was a crowd of several thousand students. He was in the middle of answering a question about mass shootings. And in the middle of the answer of that question, one shot rang out. He was shot in the neck. You see it happen very, very clearly on the videos. And there were multiple videos of him speaking and of him being shot. He died a short time later. President Trump has sent his condolences. I, of course, have encouraged you to spare a thought and a prayer for Charlie Kirk's family, for the children that he leaves behind, and for this country, which unfortunately has a political class on the left that keeps calling for political violence, and they're getting it. They're getting it in the form of attempted assassination of people like Steve Scalise of Congress, two attempted assassination attempts on President Trump. And with that in mind, I'm really interested to see what Mike, who's a naysayer, has to say about all this. Mike, you know that we've loved naysayers on this program for more than 25 years. We always put you to the head of the line. I don't know you, but you've called in and told the producer you're a naysayer. What do you and I disagree about when it comes to political violence?
Hey, Lars. So I just want to, first off, I appreciate you taking the call.
Sure.
I want to preface this conversation with the point that I believe all political violence needs to be condemned, and I do pray for Charlie's wife and children. That being said, you mentioned in the last to condemn any calls for political violence on the right. And what I'm hearing you do is you're claiming that this rhetoric and this political violence is only happening from the left. And I just want to point out multiple instances where it's happening on the right. And I want to hear your opinion on these specific points.
I'd be happy to give you my opinion, Mike. Just tell me, can you give me your favorite example of somebody on the right, say an office holder or a commentator, who has called for political violence from the right? Tell me one.
In 2022, for example, Wendy Rogers, Arizona State Senator at the time, claimed for the hanging of all traitors.
Of people convicted of sedition, or people convicted of advocating the overthrow of the United States?
It was an ambiguous term, traitors, right? And that's kind of the issue. Who does this apply to? Who is she referring to?
Right? And in fact, I don't know Wendy Rogers at all. Now, can I ask you something, though? You say, I say it's primarily on the left. I'm leaving the door open that if you can give me a good example of somebody prominent, not a Wendy Rogers. I have no idea who Wendy Rogers is. I can research it and find out. But I can give you lots and lots of people on the left, Maxine Waters and others, Nancy Pelosi, even Joe Biden. I mean, those are major names. Can you give me the last major conservative you've heard of call for political violence?
Certainly, but again, it works both ways, right?
No, it does. It doesn't work both. See, there are people who want moral equivalence. Hold on, Mike. There are people
exactly on point of what.
No, they love to have political. They love to have moral equivalence. But give me one good example of a prominent conservative, elected or not, who has called for political violence, and I can give you half a dozen liberals who've done that. So
okay,
tell
here's
me
another
what.
One. How about Joe Walsh claiming for, arguing that CNN and MSNBC reporters should be beheaded? Do you condemn that statement? And do you think that statement is representative of
Joe Walsh, the rock and roller?
Political violence? Joe Walsh, the U.S. representative for the state of Illinois at the time.
How long ago? Because I'm telling you, I don't even remember it.
But you see what's happening here, right? Every time they name a name, you say, "Oh, I don't know this." Well, of course, because you're only focusing on.
If I ask my audience who
coming from the left,
he's a guy who worked as a talk show host and was a former Republican Party rep back in 2020. Okay, so fine. But when those things happen, Mike, my producers know that if I had a soundbite of a prominent conservative calling for political violence, I'd run it. I also run the ones of the liberals and the progressives. They happen all the time. I don't hear much on the right. But tell me this. Should both sides, hold on, should both sides call it out, Mike?
I've never heard you condemn the hang Mike Pence chance on January 6th. I've never heard you condemn.
Yes, I did. No, I did, Mike. Mike, I used to like Vice President Pence. I didn't like his actions in the Trump administration, and I said so. And that was not about J6, but after J6, did I say it was wrong for those people to do that? Yes, I did. And was it wrong for anybody who broke a door or broke into the U.S. Capitol? Yes. And there were an awful lot of people who didn't break into the Capitol. They were welcomed in by the Capitol Police. But now you want to bring up J6 again. Are you hearing yourself?
I'm only bringing up that specific point. I'm not bringing up January 6th more broadly.
I'm not sure what the point is you're trying to make, though, Mike. Are you hearing anybody in the major media or anybody on the political left who is condemning it when members of their own party come out and advocate for political violence? Because I don't hear it. Do you?
I don't hear it on either side. That's the reason I'm calling, right? But I think to be objectively honest about what's happening here, you need to acknowledge that this rhetoric is coming from both sides. You know, and just because you happen to lean right, it doesn't mean that you shouldn't be able to call out and address.
Can we do this? Let me do this quantitatively, Mike. Do you think there's more of it from the left?
You know, I mean, just like you said, when I reference names, you say, "Well, I don't have the information to say that." I can't say that quantitatively, right?
Hold on. When Nancy Pelosi has done it, when Maxine Waters has done it, when Joe Biden has done it, and it doesn't get called out.
What about when Matt Gaetz is calling out for the death of all Antifa terrorists in 2020?
Terrorists? Again, yeah, I think almost any reasonable person would call.
Who defines what a terrorist is, right?
The U.S. courts and U.S. law. Mike, listen for a second. U.S. courts and U.S. law define what a terrorist is, don't they? If somebody is accused of terrorism and they go into court and that charge is proved, then they're a terrorist. So when you say nobody defines what a terrorist is, that's ridiculous. Would you say that you will hear liberals call for condemnation of the person who assassinated Charlie Kirk today? Do you think that'll happen?
Yes, Mike? I do.
You do? Well, I'm going to hold my breath and wait while they do it. Mike, thanks for that. Good naysayer. You got the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show. Portland's. Some solid advice from Senator John Kennedy.
Look, if you hate cops just because of the cops, the next time you get in trouble, call a crackhead.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails. An update on what happened in Orem, Utah today. Charlie Kirk, well-known conservative commentator, the co-founder of Turning Point USA, was assassinated by a single shot from a sniper. The suspect in question is not in police custody, even though initially they reported that he was. But glad to have you with me on the program, even on this terrible day. I do want to talk about some of the things that are going on in this country, including the inflation numbers that are softer than expected. But what does that actually mean for your wallet? Anthony Esposito joins me now, economics expert and founder and CEO of Ascalon 6 Capital. Anthony, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
So tell me this. What should we make of these numbers? Because there was a time a few months ago when anybody you'd care to talk to in economics or and especially on the left would say Donald Trump's tariffs are going to drive prices right through the roof and inflation will take off again. That hasn't happened. Does that mean something?
It certainly does. There's no reason to have thought, other than the fact that the left was attacking Donald Trump and his policy, there's no reason to have thought that tariffs would roll through and create another wave of inflation. Our inflation issues have to do with massive debt and deficit spending and a massive amount of liquidity of U.S. dollars sloshing around. The tariff argument really was another scare tactic. That's been proven to not be true. We look at the inflation numbers on an annualized basis. Those numbers are coming down. The PPI numbers today in particular were softer than expected. And most of the contribution to the PPI comes on the services side, not on the goods side. So the tariff conversation is not pushing through. PPI, CPI looks like it's softening and coming back in line. We're seeing energy down. We're seeing food down. So we are seeing improvements in inflation. And then when we look at the BLS numbers, it starts to create more of a story where the Fed really is running out of reasons to not cut rates, as they did heading into the election in a pretty politicized way. So I think that everything that has been fear-mongered is proving to be wrong. And as we head into this next Fed meeting, the setup is kind of, and the market's telling you, the setup is there for rate cuts.
Anthony, I'm not the biggest fan of the Federal Reserve. I don't really like the agency. And I think, frankly, if their job is to put on the brakes when inflation takes off and to put on the gas when the economy slows down, I think they're late to the game almost every single time. So you know my personal point of view on that, whether it matters or not. I'm not an economist, but does this mean that Trump is right to put some pressure on Jerome Powell and the folks at the Fed to bring the interest rates down and allow the economy to not fall down further?
Yeah, I do think he's right. I'm not a fan of the Fed. I am not a fan of Mr. Powell, to be 100% clear. I think he's made some very poor decisions going back to Trump's first term. The 2021-22 regional banking crisis was basically created by Powell and a reversal of, you know, lower forever policy. Everybody took on a bunch of debt at very low rates, and then he spiked rates up 75 bips at a time. So I think Trump is looking at a Fed chair who's proven himself to be pretty inept at managing both monetary policy and the balance sheet, keep in mind. And I think at this point, we have jobs that are being revised down at egregious levels. Obviously, he removed the head of the BLS with good reason. So the job market was basically non-existent for the last 2 years of Biden's presidency. And any jobs that were created and survived were actually government jobs or government-funded jobs, which, again, it's a smokescreen. It increased the deficit spending. It increased the debt. It was inflationary. It did not help. At this point, we see that jobs are not what they were. That's in the rearview mirror. And we see that inflation is actually coming down. That's in front of us. So we look at the two mandates for the Fed, right? They have price stability and full employment. Based on what we're seeing, if Mr. Powell is, as he says, data dependent, then he could take his palms away from facing up to the sky and shrugging his shoulders and saying, I don't know what to do. And he could start to cut rates just a bit, bring them back to neutral, and for now start to loosen up the economy so that we can get that private investment back into the country, which we've been working through with all these god-awful tariff deals, right? All of a sudden, we're starting to get investments back into the country. We can give jobs in manufacturing, real jobs, private jobs in the U.S. to U.S. citizens. We could start to grow this economy, loosen things up, and get rates lower so that things like car payments, 30-year fixed mortgage, credit card payments, those things start to come in. Now, they are not directly related or as directly related to the Fed funds rate as they are to the 10-year yield. There's a little bit of an ecosystem. Exactly. So if the 10-year Treasury bill, we need those rates to come down to effectively bring down the cost of living for the people in the United States. But cutting the Fed funds rate is a good start. It will loosen up liquidity. It will start to help us get out of the drudge that we're in, which, quite honestly, is clearly left by the Biden administration. So I do think he's correct in putting the pressure on Powell. I think Powell's back is to the wall because he's put himself there. And I think it's time for some action in this upcoming Fed meeting.
Well, in fact, Anthony, can you help my audience understand how if those rates come down, this also affects the government debt. We owe $37 trillion. I think about a third of that rolls over every couple of years. If it rolls over to higher rates, then it chews up more of the federal budget or borrowed money. If it goes down a little bit and we can roll some of that that debt that rolls over every couple of years, then we can roll it down to a lower rate and the interest costs for the federal treasury go down, right?
That is 100% correct. In fact, we have about $1 trillion in interest per year, and about a third of our debt, which is about $37 trillion in total. So a third of that is rolling short term. So in the next 12 months, that will roll, and we will need to effectively refinance. If we refinance that debt, let's say down 1 percentage point from where we are today, you save about $300 billion.
Wow.
So that's the bottom line, right? Exactly. It's almost like you get that, you know, you get the credit card offer to roll, you know, 20 grand out or 10 grand out, whatever it is, from an 18% card to a 0% card for the first 12 months. Most people are looking for that and making that move. This is the same type of thing where we need to roll debt out, and to roll it out at a lower interest rate will save us hundreds of billions of dollars, which, again, to your point, it reduces debt. That is anti-inflationary. That's deflationary. We want to reduce debt. We want to pull dollars back in. We want to reduce debt. We want to reduce deficit spending. That's what's going to lead to deflationary action. And remember, inflation is the rate of the price increase. It's not the price. So while we'll see some price fluctuations, what we're talking about here is how quickly are prices going up, and can we kind of draw that back so that we're not chasing higher prices with effectively lower real income?
Yeah, which also reduces all kinds of other costs, because the company that's saying, well, if inflation goes up dramatically, we're going to have to increase wages as well to help our workers keep up, and governments have to do that as well. If you can get that rate to be a little bit lower, that would be nice. But it'd be nice to see Jerome Powell actually pay attention to what he's doing. I know he would tell us, oh, no, I'm watching everything. I said, well, then why are you always late to put on the brakes? And why are you always late to put on the gas? Because it seems like you miss both directions all the time. That is Anthony Esposito, who is an economics expert. He's also the founder and CEO of Ascalon 6 Capital. Anthony, thank you very much. I appreciate you coming on the program. I'll get to your phone calls and emails in just a moment. 866-HEY-LARS. And if you're a naysayer, we always put naysayers right to the head of the line at 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. We had to bring you the sad word today that Charlie Kirk, the co-founder of Turning Point USA, was assassinated during a campus event in Orem, Utah today, shot with a single shot from a sniper, and that sniper is not in custody at this point, and Charlie Kirk has died. You're listening to the Lars Larson. Well,
Constantine Kissin on Hamas.
For years now, many of us have been warning that the barbarians are at the gate. We were wrong. They're inside. There are positives as well. I mean, say what you want about Hamas supporters, at least they know what a woman is.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. A sad day today. Charlie Kirk, co-founder of Turning Point USA, was assassinated. I just got this message from President Trump at the White House. As a mark of respect for the memory of Charlie Kirk, by the authority vested in me as President of the United States, by the Constitution and the laws of the United States, I hereby order that the flag of the United States shall be flown at half staff at the White House and in all public buildings and grounds, at all military posts and naval stations, and on all naval vessels of the federal government and in the District of Columbia and throughout the United States and its territories and possessions until sunset September 14th, 2025. I also direct that the flag be flown at half staff for the same length of time at all United States embassies, legations, consular offices, and other facilities abroad, including all military facilities, naval vessels, and stations. Donald Trump signed that today, and I think it's completely appropriate after the assassination shooting death of Charlie Kirk at a university in Orem, Utah. The suspect still not in custody. And on that note, Daniel joins us, who tells my producers he's a naysayer. Daniel, welcome to the program. We do love naysayers. What do you and I disagree about that makes you one?
Hey, what's up, sir? I've listened to you all my life. But the one thing I don't get is what happens on the left, what happens on the right. All we say with the gun shootings is we need to pray about it. We're not fixing anything. We've tried to put laws into effect, and some of them, a lot of them are wacko. But we need to actually do something instead of saying, no, we just need to pray about it. We need to ask God.
Hold on, Daniel, I'm not aware of, I certainly have never said prayer is all we need. I mean, prayer is certainly important.
Not you personally.
Hold on,
I know, sorry.
But even those people who say, offer a prayer for Charlie Kirk and for his family and the friends who loved
him. That's our excuse all the time.
No, but it's not an excuse, Daniel. Those of us who are people of faith believe that praying to God is very important.
I was raised in a Mormon religion all my life.
Well, I have been shoved. We won't get into a long discussion of LDS. But Daniel, nobody says just do this and that'll be enough. What a lot of us have suggested, I've suggested liberalization. The only time I do suggest liberalization of gun laws all the time. Explain what?
Explain liberation of gun laws.
Meaning liberalization is what I said. What I mean is you should allow more Americans to be able to carry guns and have guns in places. Gun-free zones are especially dangerous. I don't know whether that university campus was a gun-free zone or not. But gun-free zones are the place where 94% of all mass shootings happen. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised, even in the state of Utah, if it turned out that university campus is a so-called gun-free zone. They are dangerous places to be. That's one change I've advocated for decades. And so we suggest other changes to be made, but we don't merely ask for prayer, although I won't diminish the importance of a prayer for the memory of Charlie Kirk, and a prayer for the, for his family and his children that he leaves behind. Let's go to Dick. Hey, Dick, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Lars, I know that this is probably not going to be popular with some, but as a white Christian conservative, I feel like we've got targets on our back. And I think it's time for President Trump to call martial law in this country.
Well, hold on. What would the point of martial law be? You mean have the military take over policing of American cities? Why?
Well, something needs to be done to stop the rioting and the absolute destruction.
How about just enforce the laws in American cities? And you know what I think Trump has done to that end? And this, I think, will address your point. He said there's too much crime and violence in Washington, D.C. He had total opposition from the leadership of Washington, D.C. He said, I'm going to do it anyway because I have the authority to take over law enforcement in Washington, D.C. Within a couple of weeks, he had the very liberal left-wing Democrat mayor of Washington, D.C. saying, this is working. We're going to continue this partnership with President Trump. Muriel Bowser saw it working. Now, he still has opposition from Philadelphia and Chicago and New York. But he's pressing. He's got opposition from Seattle and from Portland. But the point is, if you set a good example saying this will work, and then you show it did work in Washington, D.C., then isn't that the best way? And what in the world would martial law accomplish?
Well, I guess what I'm getting at is, let's take Portland for an example.
Yeah.
No matter what law we have in place, our leaders in Portland say we're not going to obey them, and we're just going to allow Antifa to continue to
riot. And you know what? The only way to do it then is pure humiliation. In other words, when the mayor, if the media did its job, if reporters went to the mayor, Keith Wilson, who's been on this show and promised to come back and never did, if they went to him and said, Mayor, the president's crime prescription for Washington, D.C. worked. Why don't you do what he's suggesting you do with your city? And that is enforce the laws, bust the criminals, and tell the judges to hold them in custody and protect the public. Now, the media could, individual reporters, and it's shameful what passes for TV news and newspapers anymore, but if they went to the politicians and said, look, it's working in D.C., it could work here. If so, why aren't you doing it here? That could bring about a change. Otherwise, wait for the next election, because that's the only choice you have. So if you do it by example, and it's probably the best way to fix your family. If you say, hey, you spend too much time watching TV, and they say, well, Dad, you do it too. If Dad picks up a book and says, I'm going to read a book tonight, and your kids see it, and they say, hey, Dad's reading books. Maybe we ought to do that too. Seems to make him smarter. Dick, thanks for the call.
The Lars Larson Show.